My biggest success is really hope. I think that I just have, luckily I have this positive outlook that I know nothing's permanent. I mean, there are days where I feel really horrible, but I know that there's another day coming that I will feel less horrible. And so that really keeps me going. I think the biggest failure is when I totally give in and let my mind go down a rabbit hole of catastrophizing, and I've done that.
In this panel interview, we consult a patient group who are living with migraine. This panel shares successes, failures, practical tips and tools on how they live, manage, or just deal with migraine. It's an honest look at what real life is like for different people with this disease. Our patient panel are three leading advocates who are leveraging their personal experience with the disease to improve the quality of life for people with migraine. John Summer is a board member of the American Migraine Foundation. Shirley Kessel, who is the executive director of Miles for Migraine, and Alicia Torborg, who is the executive director of the Association of Migraine Disorders. John, Shirley, Alicia, welcome to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So let's start by learning a little bit more about each of you. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, and what type of migraine diagnosis you have?
Yes. So as you said, I am the executive director for the Association of Migraine Disorders. I've had migraines since I was about 10 years old. They started with kind of a typical migraine where I would have an aura and be really sick to my stomach and violently ill, oftentimes ending up in the emergency room. I had them throughout my teenage years. They kind of went away. And then when I was pregnant with my daughter, they came back and they were very similar. And then when I got to be about 45, there was a new shade of migraine. They're chronic now, and they're not as severe, but they last for months at a time.
Well, I have had migraine for about 25 years. It was in the technology business for many years, and then about 8 years ago, it went from episodic to irretractable. So I live with migraine 24/7, every day, always. And it's just different levels. Some days it's 2 or 3, and some days it's 8, 9, and just manage and keep going.
So as you mentioned, I'm the executive director of Miles for Migraine, and I am not quite sure when I had my first migraine attack. I know I was in my teens and I had really bad headaches, but no one ever told me that's what it was. I did get diagnosed when I became chronic at 25, and I had continuous chronic migraine for a year. I became pregnant and I actually got a little bit better, despite what some people say is a wives' tale. It can be, but I did get better. Episodic for all my, childbearing years, and then became chronic again about 13 years ago. So I typically have anywhere from 10 to 14 days per month right now.
So everyone on this panel has had migraine for decades. Can you describe what, and I know, John, for you, it's always there. Can you describe what a typical migraine attack feels like if you have sort of acute attacks, and then if you have a flare-up, what that experience is like?
So mine start at about a 4. If I wake up in the morning with one, it will get progressively worse throughout the day. Not much works for me in the way of abortive medications. And they can get up to maybe a 7 during the day. But like I said, mine can last for days and weeks and months at a time.
So it is irretractable and it is chronic, but I also have acute attacks like most people do. So every blue moon, and sometimes it's every month, sometimes it's every 6 months, I will get the, I guess, traditional migraine attack where you get the visuals and things start looking a little funny and you know you're in for a ride for a few days, sometimes a few weeks, and that will usually last for 2-3 hours, and you're rushing to a dark room. If you're in a car, you're getting out of the car as quickly as you can, and then it's severe pain, and it lasts, like I said, sometimes days, sometimes weeks. But aside from that, it's very unpredictable, and some days are good, some days are not good, some days you can function like most people, and some days you're shut down.
I know I'm gonna have a really bad attack when it comes behind my right eye. That's where it will start. and it just sits there and plants itself. And typically that's when I know I need to take an abortive. The other type of attack I might get is the all over head. I just have pain pulsating through my whole head. I don't get nauseated, I don't vomit, and I don't have aura. So I consider myself fortunate. But there, the attack that I get, the clasp behind the right eye, usually sends me to lie down for a while if I can, if I'm able to. It seems to help. But for the most part, I sit up, and I just, sometimes lying down makes it worse for me. So my attacks are so variable. They're never, you know, I have many different kinds. So they're never all the same.
So let's talk about how migraine has progressed over the years for each of you. Shirley, you mentioned that your attacks got better during pregnancy, which is sort of against the trend, it seems, for a lot of people. How has your condition progressed since then? Has it improved? Has it stayed the same? Or is it worse?
Well, when I became chronic again in my 40s, I got worse. I mean, it was so bad that I was almost every day having chronic pain. And so I, you know, with the onset of some of the preventive medications that I went to have prescribed, I'm doing a lot better. So I've gone down to, you know, like I said, anywhere from maybe 10 to 14 days, whereas before I was like 25 to 30 even. So I'm doing a little bit better. I'm following in the footprints of my mother. I can see that. She was exactly the same as I am.
And did she get better as she
got? She got better a couple years after she reached menopause. So at my age, I should be through menopause, but I'm not. So I'm just waiting. Yeah.
And John, tell us about your experience.
So I had 4 or 5 migraines a year, pretty much from the time I started my business. So I always kind of correlate everything with business or stress or whatever. So about 7, 8 years ago, I had a fairly stressful event. And after the event was over, I was left with one of the worst migraines I'd ever had. And it just never went away. And I would say the first year or two when I was trying to figure out frantically what was going on, it was so much worse because I was so stressed that it was going to kill me or it was going to, you know, something else was causing this. And I think over the last few years, as I've kind of let it be, and it is what it is, and it's part of me whether I like it or not, I don't fight it. I think the less that I fight it, it gets better. So that's one of my revelations that has helped me. It's just it's there, and stop trying to figure it out.
When I was younger, the severity was much worse. I had the aura and vomiting for at least a couple days, and I couldn't power through them. I mean, I was little, and they were terrible. The intensity isn't as bad now, but they can weigh me down because they're every single day. When I'm in a cycle, they're every single day. I am taking some preventative medications now, which work great. And I always try to figure out, to put a, to say, oh, this is why I have a migraine right now, because, you know, I've been under stress or lack of sleep or traveling, or sometimes there's no rhyme or reason. I recently went 2 months, and I am on a preventative right now. I went 2 months and I was elated, you know, that I hadn't had one, and I was traveling a lot and I still wasn't, like, things that are typically triggers for me, and I still wasn't having them. I figure now I don't have any stressors in my life. Things are good. And I've had one now for 2 days. So sometimes you just can't put a finger on it, which I always try to do, but sometimes I just can't. But I'm lucky now that they're not as bad as they used to be. I can power through them a lot where I used to not be able to. So.
Well, I think a lot of people are going to be wondering about what the treatments that are being used and what strategies they have to manage the condition, and we'll definitely get to that. First, I wanted to talk about your interactions with healthcare and healthcare practitioners. Can you tell us about whether you've been working with the same doctor for the entire period? Are you currently seeing a doctor, or have you changed doctors in the past?
So my story is very interesting. When they came back in my 40s, they diagnosed them as tension headaches. And there was nothing, no cure, just kind of take Tylenol and deal with it. And I just kept thinking, there's got to be something wrong. there. So I went to chiropractors, homeopaths, my general practitioner. I saw a neurologist who was a headache specialist. He prescribed me triptans. I said, they don't work. I've tried them before. And he just kind of said, So I wasn't satisfied with that. I kept thinking there has got to be, and they took x-rays and there was nothing there. I said, but there's got to be something. So I went to an ear, nose, and throat doctor. And I said, maybe I'm allergic to something. Maybe it's mold in my house or something crazy. And it was that he was an ENT who diagnosed me with migraine. They were a different type of migraine than I had had before. So I am still seeing this doctor, and that's a whole nother story. I actually work for this doctor now, and it's been a great ride. But he was one of the first people that asked me a ton of questions and really got to the bottom of it.
Sounds like the quality of doctors you've interacted with has varied significantly in your time.
I actually went to a headache specialist, and this was people who have migraine and know about migraine know this has been a banner year with the CGRP blockers that have come out. And I asked him, have you started prescribing CGRPs yet or blockers? And he looked at me and said he didn't know what they were. And he was a headache specialist. He was listed as a headache specialist. So I don't see him anymore.
Fair enough.
So Carl, I'm very fortunate. I live 5 minutes from the Mayo Clinic here in Scottsdale, Arizona. And I think I'm just a little bit fortunate that there's everything right there that I would need. But I'll be honest with you, I've seen at least 30 doctors just checking other things, whether it's a naturopath or an integrative medicine doctor or a voodoo doctor or whatever you call it. I've done it just to make sure that we've checked every box. And my doctor's experience has been fantastic, but I don't know that that's the norm. And I just spent a lot of time trying to seek out who was the best and kind of went right to that person.
That's the same with me. I have a similar story. I went to every doctor under the sun. And well, when I first was diagnosed in my 20s and I was chronic, continuous chronic, I actually was dating a doctor who I ended up marrying, which was helpful. So I ended up going to a neurologist right away. But from there, I wasn't getting better. So they put me on preventives, but they weren't working. And I was on 25 different preventives in a year. Wow. And I had 2 car accidents, and because of the side effects from the medication. So I kept trying. I was going to all these different, they didn't really have integrative medicine back then, I don't think. But I tried every type of therapy, and eventually, nothing really worked. That's when I became pregnant and I got a little bit better. So
it sounds like you really hold on to a good doctor when you find one. You've started working for one and you married one.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I definitely had a lot of inroads to a lot of physicians. But I have to say, he sent me to a neurologist originally after I got worse, after having, I think, my 3rd child. And I didn't like this doctor because he wasn't a headache specialist. I didn't even know at the time there was such a thing as a headache specialist. And I had good insurance, so I could go to anyone I wanted. And so I stayed with him not knowing. And then my daughter became sick, and we took her right to a headache specialist. And then I realized there's a whole world of headache specialists. So then I started seeing one, and I've been with the same doctor ever since, and I'm very happy.
How do each of you manage your attacks? So let's start talking about the treatments and the strategies, and you might have a tall glass of water or a piece of food. What is it that each of you do? And we'll start with Alicia.
So I usually start with something over the counter. I figure the lowest remedy may work. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But if it doesn't, then I'll try a triptan. And that, again, can kind of be a crapshoot if it will work or not. I find exercise helps, not high impact exercise, but even if it's just going for a walk. A perfect example was this morning. I was laying in bed at 5 o'clock this morning. I'd been in pain for like 24 hours and I couldn't go back to sleep. And I said, I can either lay here and not be able to sleep because it hurts so bad, or I could go down to the gym. So I got my friends, we went down to the gym, and I still had the pain. But it was lessened a little bit, and I was concentrating on it. a little bit less. So for me, that helps. But I mean, I always try to be sure that I'm eating correctly, especially, you know, when I'm in pain, that I'm drinking and hydrated. But that and exercise can kind of help or make me think about it a little less.
When I get an acute attack, there's not a whole lot you can do. You're in the dark and you're waiting for it to just go away. So I do take over-the-counter medicine first as well. But I think the key for me is get out of it as quickly as you can. Physically, don't stay in bed. Everybody I know who has severity of migraines like myself that are bedridden, it makes you worse. So you just got to keep going, and as quickly as you're able to get out of it, you just go. I also do exercise when I'm struggling. It seems to lessen the pain and probably, I don't know, takes my mind off of it, but I know some people exercise makes it worse. So for me, I'm very fortunate. It actually helps me.
During an acute attack?
Well, I would say if I'm not during an acute attack and it's just my pain is high, exercise definitely helps me. If it's during an acute attack, I usually wait till the worst of it's over, but it helps the lingering effects to go away quicker if I'm exercising. And then usually those type of attacks will last, like I said, days. I'm definitely exercising first thing in the morning to kind of knock it out a little bit or knock it down a little bit. So for me, I'm fairly lucky that that's, you know, something I can do.
I agree with both of you. For me, exercise is really key. If I get into a slump where I'm just walking. I don't do high impact exercise. And if I can just maintain to get to those 10,000 steps a day, sometimes it's only 7,000, that is one of my best preventives, because I've been on so many preventives over a lifetime that are prescription that they help a little bit. I mean, what I'm on right now is helping. I'm on 3 preventives and exercise, and I live my life like a baby. I mean, I go to sleep at the same time every night. I wake up at the same time. I eat at the same time. I wake up with my little meditation yoga ritual every morning and breathing. And that's what works for me. And that enables me to not, when I do get the attack, I'm not forced into bed, because then I take my abortives. And I know I have to take them right away because timing is crucial. And then I'm able to just go on with my life most of the time. So it's the side effects of the medications that will put me into bed, not the migraine attack itself.
So can we talk, and you know, as much as you can, that you're comfortable with, like the actual medications that you use? So you both mentioned you have over-the-counter medications. Is that a ibuprofen? Is that an aspirin? What are you using?
Excedrin migraine.
I have had a lot of challenges with medicine. I've tried hundreds of migraine medicine, and I'm going to tell you, I don't have one that I like. They cause more problems for me than they've helped. So I take Tylenol, and I take 800 milligram ibuprofen, which is kind of the double strength. And I'm otherwise medicine-free and have been for a long time.
I am also an over-the-counter person. I start, well, actually, no, now it's prescription. Diclofenac, which is an NSAID.
And what's an NSAID?
Oh, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. And so that is my go-to. And a half a Compazine, not a whole one, because a whole one will definitely put me into bed. And sometimes just those two alone can sort of knock it out or bring it down a little bit. So I'm on a CGRP blocker, I'm on Botox, and I am on a antidepressant, which has pain reduction properties, and that's what I'm on prophylactically.
And do you also have the 10,000 steps that you try to do each day and a few other things?
Well, so my non-prescription modalities are walking and yoga, meditation, and what's called in the yoga world pranayama, which is breath work. I used to teach yoga, so I at least have no excuse for not knowing how to practice yoga. And just sometimes that stretching alone, you know, because when I get the attack, I can tell because my neck will start to really get locked up. And that's my cue, okay, it's time to start stretching the neck. So I'm always checking in. I mean, I have a very strong mindfulness practice. I've had a lot of training in mindfulness, and I'm trained in the MBSR program, which is mindfulness-based stress reduction. I probably would say that's probably one of the most beneficial things I've ever done in my life to help me deal with migraine, because, you know, it's the saying is, pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. So you know the pain's going to come, but how you deal with the pain, how you relate to the pain is certainly what's helped me, because I know when I start to hold my breath, when as soon as the attack comes, the first words in my mind are, oh, darn, I won't say what I really say on camera, but you know, it's not good. It's catastrophizing, because that's what we do, because we're humans. And so that has been probably my saving grace, that if I'm going to have the attack, I welcome it. I say, just, you know, come on in, here it is, and I'll work with us.
I agree with you on the mindfulness and sort of meditation parts. It's been one of my secret weapons. Mm-hmm. And we have another expert who's going to be talking about that at the summit this week, Dr. Rebecca Wells. So keep an eye out for that interview. John, do you want to tell us about your preventive strategies, both alternative lifestyle and any medicinal strategies?
So at the moment, I'm not doing anything pharmaceutical. I've decided to take a period off of that. And just after some really bad side effects, I just said I need some time. So I decided I would take at least 1 year off of all medicines. And I'm probably 9 months into that at this point. I do some things that are traditional and some that are not so traditional. I drink celery juice every day, and I've done that for about 9 months, and there's a really big buzz right now about celery juice and its anti-inflammatory properties, light sensitivity properties, and there's also, there's just a lot about celery juice if you look it up, and who knows if it's real, it's not real, but it works for me, so I run with it. I also do a lot of mindfulness. I do meditate, but I'll be honest with you, I struggle with it because for me, I'm a right brain kind of fast-paced personality, and for me, it tends to put me in that 20 minutes of, okay, what are my problems? What are my solutions? What's going on in my life? And I get out of it, I'm more stressed than when I start, so I know that it may not be the best thing for me.
You just haven't been to the right teacher.
I've been to some pretty good teachers, and they're like, okay, well. And if I had this teacher in front of me. So right. 3.5 years ago, I have no musical talent. I've never played a musical instrument in my life. I picked up an acoustic guitar. And I play a nylon Spanish guitar that is the most calming, quiet guitar that you can buy. And I don't play electric, and I rarely play steel string. But for me, it is a form of meditation. And it's kind of this whole thing of, you can't use your right hand, left hand, and have rhythm, and also think about pain. It doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's my savior. It's really it's changed my life on a not only for migraine, but just spiritually, it's been a big deal for me. So those are two of my big, you know, tools that I use. I do Qigong. I do a little bit of yoga. I exercise every day. I do biofeedback. So I do a fair amount, but I also go through phases, because if you sit there and focus on all the things you're doing too much to fix the problem, it can kind of amplify the problem. So you can't overdo it either. It's total tightrope.
Like, you don't want to become obsessed.
I've been there, and it's not helpful. So I think when you're having problems, you do more than when you're not.
And how about you?
So I, like Shirley, am on a CGRP blocker and antidepressant and Botox. They help for sure. Before I had discovered, or before I was on this regimen and I was really in a bad place, I used to do triathlons, and I had to stop. I just had to back out of races and stop. I couldn't bear the thought of wearing a helmet or a bathing cap or... And it was sad. It was a really sad time in my life. But I found other ways to get out and to exercise. And for me, just being outdoors, whatever season it is, I live in New England, so it's really cold and snowy in the winter, but I love going out with my dogs and taking a walk. And I think, like what John said, once you get your mind out of being in pain and you're thinking of other things, like whether it's your dogs or hiking or kayaking or, you know, doing anything outdoors is my escape.
So as it was said earlier, this is kind of the banner year for CGRPs and new treatments and treatments that are coming in. But the migraine disease is real and it's still being lived and felt by ourselves, but also for our audience. How do you balance the, I guess, tension between living your life and trying to enjoy it, but at the same time managing your health and the routine that often is required for chronic migraine?
So with me, when I feel good, I say yes to everything. And my friends joke, they said, before you say, heck yeah, can you check with your husband or family or your calendar? Because I'll double book. I try to say yes to absolutely everything that I can, anything that's enriching or fun, whether it be...
I don't do that. I say no to a lot. Good for you.
When I feel well, I do. Because yeah. I know when I don't feel well, you can't help it. You might miss things. So right. And I say that to my children, too. They have migraines as well. Not as severe, but I encourage them to do the same thing. Say yes. Say yes to as many things as you can when you're feeling well.
You go through a period where your friends and your family don't quite understand what's going on. And after you've done it for long enough, they kind of do understand. And so it doesn't make it as hard after a while. But the first few years, they just don't get it. It doesn't matter who it is, your best friend, your dad, they just don't get it. So after a while, it seems to get a little easier. So that's a good thing if you're starting out with migraine. Your support staff will eventually understand. But I also tend to say yes when I'm feeling good too much. And then I'm not feeling good and I have all this stuff I committed to and then I want to backtrack and then I do nothing for a while and then I'm bored and then I jump back into that cycle. So I got to figure that one out, but it's a tightrope as well.
Well, I'm like this. I just live my life like this because, I mean, there's no question on days I feel well, I sort of bump it up a little bit, but I'm very cautious in a way because I know I'm going to pay for it. So I really do live my life like a baby. I just am on a schedule and I just try to, you know, just try to stick to it. I listen, you know, stop when I'm tired, eat when I'm hungry, that kind of thing. And that works for me.
So pain can be isolating, and particularly, as John, you were saying, that you know, family members may not understand, particularly in the first few years. Has anyone felt isolated at any time because of their condition?
Oh, absolutely. I think when I first got diagnosed in my 20s, all my friends were so active and all these things were happening where they were going out all the time. I mean, you're young, you go to parties. I was a mess. I mean, I felt so horrible. I didn't know what was going on. No one actually even sat down and explained it to me. You know, they said you have migraine, but they didn't explain all the ways that my life was going to be affected. So I felt really like I was forging through this by myself. And the same thing when my daughter became diagnosed at 16 and had to drop out of high school. I didn't know anyone that had a child that was that sick that, you know, had to drop out of high school. And her friends didn't understand. So I felt isolated as a parent and a caregiver, and then I have felt isolated as a person with migraine.
Mine just started one day. I mean, I had a few migraines a year, and then it just hit me. So it was a little bit different. I had a normal life like anybody else, and then it just changed on a dime. So it was really challenging for not only me, but people around me. But as far as being isolated, I struggle outside. I can't do sun at all. So some people have light sensitivity and some people have light sensitivity. 5 minutes in the sun and I have an attack every single time, 100% of the time. So all these mindful things we talk about, which is go walk in nature and go, I can't do any of that. So we literally go to areas of Hawaii that there's jungles so that I can walk and I can hike and do all these things. So yeah, isolating is not being able to do some of the things that we love to do and saying no more than we want to. Mm-hmm. So, absolutely.
I would say the worst isolation was when I was a child. And I grew up with brothers, and we were always out and about doing fun things or on family vacations, and I would get them all the time. And I felt like I was always missing out. I was always in a dark room crying or in the hospital when everyone else was, you know, doing something fun. And then as I was older, when I had to start backing out a lot of the activities that I was doing, like triathlons and races, and I was on medications that made my blood pressure drop, and I just couldn't compete anymore. So again, I felt like I was just being left behind. So I had to find something new to kind of fill that void.
So if you're isolated, you're in pain, do you think feelings of depression are normal in that circumstance?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think if you didn't feel depression, then you would be not admitting it to yourself. I think it's okay to feel that way. And I think, you know, luckily there's so many things now that we can do. We have a lot of opportunities. In advocacy alone, if I was not in this community working with all these people and seeing them on a regular basis, I think my life would be so different. I feel so fortunate every day that I am in a community of like-minded people and we're doing great work together. And to me, I like to be live with people one-on-one versus just, you know, being online and talking through a chat room. That's what works for me. Everyone's different.
There's a lot of conversation about this depression and or anxiety cause migraines. Or does migraine cause anxiety and depression?
Right.
From what I understand, and I'm also in this in an organization where I know a fair amount, you're either born with it or you're not born with it. So really, anxiety and depression does not cause migraine. Now, it can add to it, but most people that I know didn't have any problems until they had migraine. And when you're living in fear of light or weather or smells or you name it, then you have some anxiety. It's just the way it is. And anxiety and depression are hand in hand. One's the up, one's the down. And it's just the way it is. So I think everybody who lives with chronic migraine has anxiety and depression. If they don't, I don't, tell me how.
So. Have you had to manage migraine in a workplace or with other employers?
Well, I work from home, so I am sure that if I had to go to a workplace every day and get myself there in a commute situation, I don't think I could do it every day. I'm lucky I wake up, I am in my office right across the hall, and some days I'm in my pajamas till, you know, noontime, and that's okay. So I am very fortunate that I've not had to manage that.
Well, the not so glamorous is migraine ended my career. So I stopped working because of my migraine, and I had a flourishing business and everything I wanted, and it just one day had to stop because it was too much too fast, and the stress was aggravating my condition. I do hear from a lot of people that are in either in treatment or in the foundation or just friends of friends that have had challenges with migraine in the workplace. And it's unbelievable how bad it is. And it's not really discussed like it should be. So if I was at an employer and I was suffering with migraine, I think the first thing I would do is I would sit down with my employer and open up the world of migraine to them and show them everything and present it to them and just say, hey, this is what I live with. And make sure they understood it. And if they weren't compassionate, then I wouldn't work there anymore. But I've heard horror stories.
When I was pregnant with my daughter, I was in banking and finance. I was recently promoted to a vice president. There were a lot of men, all my supervisors years ago, they were men. So I already felt like as a woman, I had something to prove. I was young, so I felt like I had something else to prove. And now I was pregnant, and I was kind of feeling that that could have also been another check against me. And then I started getting terrible migraines when I was pregnant. And you know, my bosses were miles away. They weren't in the same office, but I remember asking my husband to bring a couch into my office. And when I would get a migraine, I would just shut the doors and the blinds and lay down until I could come out again. I couldn't even drive home you know, because the aura was so bad, but I wouldn't dare. I wouldn't dream of telling anybody. Part of my story is, though, I had gone to my doctor and told them that I was changing careers. I was going to go out on my own. And he kind of said, well, what do you do? And I told him, and he said, I really need someone as an executive director for the Association of Migraine Disorders. So it's just funny how your life can change, and it's not something, I didn't know anything about a nonprofit world. But my life just changed. And I'm so lucky that, like, surely I can work from home now. I know so many people just don't have that luxury. Mm-hmm. It's an unbelievable luxury. And this morning, you know, we're here working, you know, this week. My colleague also has migraine. We both had it this morning. So we were laying in bed in the dark, but we were working in bed. It's just, I mean, that's such a unique, a unique situation. And I realize I'm really, really fortunate. But like John said, I feel like people should be able to speak up about migraine at work. And, you know, the organization I am in and, you know, that CHAMP is in, we're really trying to help people get that message out and help get that message out to big employers.
How has migraine affected the family? Shirley, you said that your daughter has migraine. Yeah. Can you tell us about that?
I have. Well, I grew up with a mother with migraine, and I learned how to give her injections when I was 16 years old because I was the oldest child. So I was a caregiver for my siblings and my father when I was a child growing up. Then I developed migraine, and I have three daughters, and two have migraine. One of them, the youngest, had to drop out of high school, and she still hasn't finished college. And then my other daughter, my middle daughter, also is now chronic, who has started episodic when she was a teenager. So it's just rampant in my gene pool. And so on every level, it seems like every day one of us has something going on. And so it's affected the family dynamic, especially like when we go on a vacation, for example, and somebody can't be at the dinner table and we're all trying to have a family meal and that's not happening. And we're understanding, but on some level, from the outside looking in, it's a lot of people don't understand, especially when my youngest was laying in bed for a year. I mean, she was out of school, you know, she was so sick, and family members didn't understand. And that's really hard. And so the only thing I was able to do was just forge ahead and not listen to all those voices that were saying, are you sure? She just doesn't have a really bad headache, or, you know, did you try this? Did you try that? We all know how that is. So yeah, it's hard. It's called, you know, wegrain. It's not migraine. It's wegrain because we all are affected.
Mm-hmm. It changes everything. I mean, for me, it was drastic and quickly. So it changes every family vacation. It changes where you sit when you're having dinner. It changes mm-hmm. who's driving at what time of day. It affects everything in our lives. Fortunately for me, my wife is very good about trying to just keep things going forward the way they were. And not that it's not acknowledged, but it's not the focal point of our family. We try to make it, it has been, but we try to not make it that. My daughter also has migraine. Fortunately, it's not, it's episodic, so she doesn't get them that often and scares the heck out of me that this will happen to her, but what can you do?
So both of my children have episodic migraine. And they're not the most severe, which is fortunate. And I always wonder, you know, is there something that's going to change with my daughter in particular? Because I think with women, it can change more with their hormones, and keep my fingers crossed that more medications keep coming out, more research is done, and they can keep it at a manageable level.
What role has education played in your own self-management of the condition?
Oh, it's huge. I think as a person with migraine, there are so many resources now that you can learn about migraine. Obviously, the Migraine World Summit is by far the best because you can view it from the luxury of your bed if you're not having a good day. There's no reason why in this day and age people shouldn't be armed to go into their provider because the provider doesn't have time to educate you about migraine. They only have, you know, maybe 6 minutes with you when you get right down to the nitty-gritty. So it's important. And I feel, you know, I feel like I'm pretty well educated. So I think it's helped me. And I would also add that advocacy needs to be part of the treatment plan. So as part of your education, if you can understand why advocacy can actually help you in the long run because you feel connected to a community, I think that is a part of education that needs to also be considered.
I agree with Shirley. There's a lot more out there now today that it wasn't out there when I first started my journey. So education is it's huge, but I also think living in it all the time, your body's living in it. If you choose to have your mind living in it too, can sometimes be counterproductive. So you got to be careful that you're not reading about migraine all day, every day. You need to have some distraction because distraction is by far my best tool.
Yes, I would agree with what both of you said. Education is key, knowing what works for you and what doesn't too. But the more you know, the more armed you are to make better decisions on what you may want to try or, you know, just try managing your life differently.
So to wrap up, we're going to talk about your biggest successes and your biggest failure. So do you want to kick us off, Shirley, with what's been one of the biggest successes that you've had in managing the disease?
My biggest success is really hope. I think that I just have, luckily I have this positive outlook that I know nothing's permanent. I mean, there are days where I feel really horrible, but I know that there's another day coming that I will feel less horrible. And so that really keeps me going. I think the biggest failure is when I totally give in and let my mind go down a rabbit hole of catastrophizing. And I've done that in the past, and that can make you feel really depressed. And so if getting into that situation can, you know, these are more things that are in my mind than I would say physical things that I've done. So that would be my answer.
I think my greatest success is finding like people that have what I have and at similar levels to what I have. And I have probably a half a dozen people that are my lifeline when I'm having a bad day or when they're having a bad day or I just want to. And most of the time it starts with, you know, I'm in pain and this is what's going on. But midway through the conversation, it turns into we laugh about it. And we try to just poke fun at the challenges that we have. So that's something I think everybody who has migraine needs to find a buddy or somebody who's got a similar type of migraine that they have, that they can have for themselves when they need help. I also found music. Music has been, like I mentioned earlier, it's soothing, it's healing, it's as quiet as I want it to be, as loud as I want it to be, whatever mood I want to be in, whether I create it or I'm listening to it, music can get me through just about every bad spot. And even when I have the worst acute attacks, I have go-to music that I just put on until it's done.
Well, one of my biggest successes is my career, that I never thought it would have led me in this direction. But to be in the community that I'm in and knowing I really make a difference in education and research and advocacy, it's the most rewarding thing I've ever done. This year has been great with the new medications that have come out. It's given me hope. And even when they fail, I still feel like there are so many new medications on the horizon that are coming out. It gives me hope, and I think it gives a lot of people hope. Biggest failure? There was probably 1 year where I tried, like you both have said, a ton of medications. And one in particular was so bad that I couldn't play the game Battleship. That's a children's game, ages 9 and up. And I couldn't follow it. Like, that's how debilitating it was mentally for me.
That happened to me too. But not with Battleship, but with another,
right. So that
other
was,
things.
It was almost right. Funny, you know? Yeah. And so that's behind me. But there are, it's trying those different remedies, medications, whatever it is, to figure out what helps you. And I feel like I'm finally at a spot between my lifestyle, my work, and the medications I'm on that I'm in a good place.
And just lastly, what final advice would you like to leave with the audience?
I would say there's a really good book called Radical Acceptance by Tara Brach. I think perspective, your perspective on living with this disease is also as important as whatever medications you're taking. So I look at my life as, I've got this, I'm going to work with it, and I'm not going to push it away, I'm going to embrace it. And so that has worked best for me, and that's why I feel so hopeful.
I agree with that. I think letting it be what it is a really big part. Not fighting it is critical. I think there are things that you used to do that you may not be able to do anymore, and you have to find new hobbies. You have to find new adventures that play well with migraine. I mean, it's just the way it is.
I think migraine has made me stronger. There are times when it makes me weaker, but I think as a whole, it makes me stronger. And my advice is don't give up. Mm-hmm. Don't settle for a doctor that you're not pleased with. You're the boss, and you have to be the boss of this condition and find what works for you.
Alicia, John, Shirley, thank you so much for being so open and honest about your experiences with migraine disease. We really appreciate having you on the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.